You know, I grew up in a home in which my mother was Texan, and because she was Texan, we listened to country music. Now, I would often say that I began listening to country music before it was cool to listen to country music. Now it seems everybody is listening to country music, but back in the days when we were listening to country music, when my mother was listening to country music, it was people like George Jones, Tammy Wynette, and Jim Ed Brown. There was also another individual who was a singer by the name of Tom T. Hall. He composed a song, or I don't know if he composed it, but he sang a song. And it was a song basically from a cowboy poet, as the story goes, and it was a song about priorities and the meaning of life. And it was basically told pretty much in the title of the song. The title of that song by Tom T. Hall was Faster Horses, Younger Women, Older Whiskey, and More Money. Faster Horses, Younger Whiskey, or Younger Women, Older Whiskey, and More Money. It speaks to priorities. Now, our priorities, we all have priorities, and our priorities change from time to time. When you are in high school, your priorities are different than when you are out on your own. When you are single, your priorities are different than when you are married. When you are married, your priorities are different than when it's just husband and wife, and now you bring children into the mix and your priorities change. They change over time. Spiritually speaking, if I were to ask the question, what is our priority? What would we say? How would we answer that particular question? I think most people would probably go to Matthew 6:33 and say, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. That is the priority. Well, that's true, but perhaps we need to think about it in greater and more specific terms. I'd like to talk a little bit about that this afternoon in the split sermon. For those of you that like to take notes and need a title, the title is exactly the title of that song, Faster Horses, Younger Women, Older Whiskey, and More Money. That way, when you're reviewing your notes 5 years from now, you'll see that title and you'll go back and say, what was that sermon all about? It's about priorities. What are our priorities? Again, as I said, Matthew 6:33 would be what most people would say, but the greater question is, what is the meaning of life? If we understand the answer to that question, then we should have a grasp on what our priority or our priorities should be. As children of the family of God, what are the priorities that we must have? And what can we learn from history about priorities? We just went through a Bible study when we talked about the very fact of Elijah coming on the scene and getting the children of Israel to understand you cannot have it both ways. You either need to worship the prophets of Baal or you need to worship the one true God. What are your priorities? You can't sit in the middle. What are the priorities? There was another message that went out some time ago. That was a message from the prophet Haggai. The message of the prophet of Haggai was following a decree from Cyrus in 538 BC. It was, again, a decree that went out to rebuild the temple. And at that particular time, when the decree went out from Cyrus, comparatively few people, history would say about 50,000, would initially decide to return to a desolate Jerusalem. Because after many, many years in Babylonian captivity, the Jews had built homes, they had planted gardens, maybe even started a successful business, they had married, they had raised families, they were settled. And humanly speaking, as some might expect, they were reticent. They weren't really sure they wanted to leave this settled way of life and return to a troubled homeland. They had gotten used to faster horses, younger women, older whiskey, and more money. Their priorities had changed. And so with that first wave of returning exiles coming back to a desolate Jerusalem, it was relatively small. Now, Haggai was going to be sent by God to address the problem to the people and let them know that their priorities had changed. They had become more interested in all of those other things that I spoke about in the title of that song, rather than the sight and the vision and the importance of the temple. Let's go back to a moment here, back in Haggai chapter 1. In Haggai chapter 1, we find a passage here that speaks to this particular time when the decree had gone out. And as I said, relatively few people are going to want to go back. The command had been given. Again, it had come from God. They were to go back and they were to rebuild the temple. And there's some very pointed language that is used by the prophet. Again, being inspired by God. Haggai chapter 1, notice verse 2. He says, "Thus says the Lord of hosts, saying, this people says the time has not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built." In other words, they had decided for themselves when the house should be built. It's not time to do it now. We're settled now where we're at. We're fine here. We're in captivity. We've got homes. We've planted our gardens. We're comfortable. We don't need to go back to Jerusalem. Verse 3, "Then the word of the Lord came by Haggai the prophet, saying, is it time for yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses and this temple to lie in ruins? Now therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways." This is a statement that's going to be made twice in a passage of three scriptures. Consider your ways. He says, "You have sown much and bring in little. You eat but do not have enough. You drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe yourselves, but no one is warm. And he who earns wages to put into a bag with holes." Verse 7, "Thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways." It sounds much like we see in society today. That again, people are looking at what they have and it's not enough. As we live in a consumer-driven society, we find that it's not enough. I can prove it to anyone in this room that uses an iPhone. Who in this room has an iPhone 1? Probably not. Everyone out here probably has the next generation or the next generation or the next generation. Again, it's one of those things where we consume and we want more and more and more. Now, I understand technology changes. I tend to be a creature of habit. I had a phone right before the feast that was going bad. I told my wife it just needed a new battery. It would get to the point where it was about 60% battery life and it would just automatically shut off and then restart and shut off and restart. She said, "You need to go get a new phone." I said, "No, it's fine. I can plug it in and everything's fine. It works. I'm a creature of habit." She says, "You're going to be up at the feast. You're going to need your phone as a feast coordinator and you're not going to be able to use your phone because it's going to go dead. Get a new phone." Yes, dear. But we're creatures of habit. Some of us are creatures of habit. Others, we need that new technology. We want that new technology. Now, again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong if you decided to go out and get an iPhone 10. But my point that I'm driving at is we find that in society we are driven by consumerism. We, again, see the things that we want. What was happening here was, again, if you go back to verse 4, he says, "Is it time for yourselves to dwell in your paneled house while this temple is lying in ruins?" In other words, he was saying, it's not wrong for you to want something nice, but how is it that my temple is not being built, but your houses are all well and good? The priorities had changed. The priorities had changed. When we consider our ways, we are forced to do certain things. We are forced as individuals to look at our motives. We seek the matter or matters from the heart. Why am I doing what we do? When we begin to look at those things, we ask the question when it comes to doing certain things, will this really please God? If I make this decision, will this really please God? Now, again, I'm not talking about buying a new phone. That's not what I'm getting at. I guess I'm trying to go a little bit deeper than that and ask the question, when we make a decision to do something, we simply ask the question, will this really please God? I'm a little tired today. I don't feel like getting dressed up and coming to Sabbath services, so I'll just watch the webcast because it's easy. And I can sit in my pajamas and watch the webcast. Well, will that really please God? It's a decision we make, but will it really please God? What will be the fruits of a decision that I make? If I decide that I don't have enough money this pay period to pay my tithes to God, what's going to be the fruit of that decision? I'm reminded of the story that Mr. Shabalala, the elder in Zimbabwe, told me. Again, you're dealing with a people that don't have a lot of money. You're dealing in a country that has 85% unemployment. He talked about a man he's now died. He was a deacon in one of the churches in Zimbabwe, and he had sold about 10 goats. He had a fistful of cash. And he was wavering on whether or not he should tithe on that money, because it's not a situation where he's going to have another fistful of cash coming in next week or the week after. What will be the fruit of that decision? Will this draw me closer, this decision I make, will it draw me closer to God, or will it take me further away? That is essentially what God was trying to show them when he said, is it time for you to dwell in your panel houses and let this temple lie in ruins? The decision here is going to draw you further away from me. Now, again, I speak as someone who loves my Jeep Grand Cherokee, that loves my house that has air conditioning in the summer and heat in the winter. I love all of those things, but again, will a decision to want and more of those things and bigger and better things, will it take me further away from God? That's the question we have to ask. These were the things that he was trying, that again, Haggai was called in order to get them to understand. Consider your ways. Consider your motives. What are you doing here? Years and years later, there were another people that had the same sort of problem. Let's go over there for a moment. Revelation chapter 3. Revelation chapter 3. Revelation chapter 3, we find the letter of the letters to the seven churches in Revelation, the seventh one being to Laodicea in verse 17, Revelation 3 and verse 17. He says, because you say, I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing. Well, it wasn't Jesus Christ who was looking at that and said, you know, you're rich, you're well, you don't need anything. You're good. It was them who were telling and saying, no, we don't need this, we're good. We've got nice homes. We got great vehicles to drive. We got wonderful clothes to wear. We've got food on the table. It's all good. Because you say, I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing, and do not know that you are wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. Laodicea's motives had been altered. They had been compromised. In much the same way as the time of Haggai, when they were told to go back after that captivity to rebuild the temple, and they simply said, you know what? We're good. We're good. We're going to stay here. We've got a good house. We've got a nice existence here. I just planted some lettuce. It's going to come up here in about 90 days. I need to have that lettuce harvested before we can go anywhere. I'm just going to stay and wait. The priorities had changed. Again, as I said before, notice carefully, Jesus Christ did not say, he said, because you say, I am rich. We come to an understanding where priorities are driven by what the motivation is. So let's ask the question, what are the three priorities that we must have? Let's boil it down from just simply the three priorities. What are the three priorities? Number one, let's look at these a little bit. Number one, God must come first. God must come first. Again, I go back to the statement that was made in Haggai chapter 1 and verse 4 when he said, you've got your paneled homes, but my house lies in ruins. He did not say it was wrong for them to have homes. He never said that. But his point was, why is it that I'm coming second and you're coming first? Why is it necessary that your dwelling is before my temple? He never said it was wrong. Jesus Christ was essentially saying the same thing to Laodicea when he said, there's nothing wrong with you having wealth. There's nothing wrong with you having riches. The problem is, spiritually speaking, you don't understand that you are poor. That you are poor. Notice over in Exodus chapter 20. Let's go over to Exodus chapter 20. God must come first in everything we do. In the decision-making process, he must come first. Exodus chapter 20, we go back to the Ten Commandments. We go back to the first statements that are made here in verses 2 and 3. It's about as simplistic and basic and foundational as it gets. Exodus chapter 20 and verse 2, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. It wasn't just for Israel, that's for us as well. We were in bondage in terms of spiritual Egypt. We celebrate that every year on the night to be much observed when we are reminded of what God has done and brought us out of spiritual bondage to the point where we understand we have partook of the Passover the night before and we celebrate on that night to be much observed. No, it's not a physical bondage as Israel was in physical Egypt, but it is a spiritual bondage as we were in spiritual Egypt. He says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. Now, I've not been to all your homes, but I can say with 100% assurance, I'm pretty sure that none of you on your front lawn has a statue of the Virgin Mary. I'm confident of that. I'm confident of that. I'm confident that right now I can go to your homes and there is no lingering Halloween decorations on your front porch. I'm confident of that. I'm confident that if I come to your house on December the 25th, we're not going to find a Christmas tree. I'm confident of that. But we tend to worship, we tend to be involved and so heavily connected to other things that we lose sight of God. Technology. Social media, outside influences. We can become so involved and so wrapped up in things around us that we simply say, I don't have time for God. Again, I've told this story a number of times. It sticks in my mind some, I don't know, 10 years later that an individual that comes up to my wife in one of our former congregations that we had years upon years upon years ago and made the statement, I've just been so busy this week, I haven't even had a chance to pray. And I'm like, what is going on in your life? What is going on in your life that you are so busy that everything else is first besides communication with God? Priorities. Priorities. Somewhere along the line, something breaks down. Something becomes more important. We look at the Sabbath. We understand the importance of the Sabbath. We come together on the Sabbath. We worship with one another on Sabbath. We sing hymns on the Sabbath. We congregate with one another on the Sabbath. We talk about the week we've had the week before. We talk about the week ahead. We talk about the trials we're going through. We talk about the difficulties we might have. We talk about things that we want each other to pray about for us. We come before God on this Sabbath because God comes first. Now, again, I make the caveat here for those that are on the webcast in some remote areas of the United States right now, because generally speaking, when I make that statement, someone comes back and says, well, I don't have the ability to come to service. I live 2 hours. I know that. I understand that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about somebody who physically has the ability to be here on the Sabbath, but they choose not to because God doesn't come first. God doesn't come first. Notice over 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3. 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3. Many a person has traveled a long way to keep the Sabbath, to keep the holy days. Many a person has come a long way in terms of making certain and sure that God must come first. 1 John chapter 5 and verse 3. Let's begin in verse 2. He says, by this we know, 1 John 5 verse 2, by this we know that the love of the children of God when we that we love the children of God when we love God and keep his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Nobody is, again, looking at you with a microscope, with binoculars. Nobody's sitting out there on the street trying to take a look and see how you keep the Sabbath day. That is between you and God. But everyone must evaluate what they do on that 24-hour period from sunset to sunset and ask the question, am I putting God first? Am I putting God first? It's a matter of priorities. It's simply a matter of priorities. We may not break the Sabbath by working it or working on it, but sometimes we can bruise the Sabbath. We can bruise it. We may not break it, but we could be bruising it. Notice over in Luke chapter 5. Luke chapter 5 and verse 11. Let's take a look at one verse. Luke chapter 5 and verse 11. We find a situation here where Jesus Christ is calling some of his disciples, some that would end up, again, being apostles. He makes the statement here, let's pick it up in verse 9, for he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish which they had taken. Again, as he signaled to them where to throw out their nets, they bring it in, they're amazed at the catch. Verse 10, and so also were James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid, from now on you will catch men. Or other gospel accounts use the term, I will make you fishers of men. Verse 11, so when they had brought their boats to land, they forsook all and followed him. They forsook all. Now what does that mean, to forsake all? We come to an understanding and realization when we were baptized. For many a person within the church, and an understanding and a realization that we don't go back to a way of life that there once was. When you're a second, third, and fourth generation, when this is all you've known, you don't really understand to the same degree as someone who is a first generation. Because we've always had the church. I've always had the church. My earliest recollection, I think I was probably in the neighborhood of about 3 years old, as far back as I can remember, in Edmonton, Alberta, being in part of the church. So I have, again, always been a part of the church. But sometimes when we don't have that same sort of viewpoint as the first generation of the church, it's different for the second, third, and fourth generation. To forsake something all means you simply turn your back on it. That the priorities are simply, again, God, and God must come first. That's what we said when we said we were going to be baptized. We wanted to follow this way of life. Doesn't mean we couldn't have the paneled home. What it simply made the statement was that the priority must be first the work of God and what God tells us to do, and then the other things fall in line. Have we forsaken? Are we willing to? Will we continue in it? So the first priority must be, regardless, and it breaks down from there as I've tried to show you, that God must come first. God must come first. Number two, second priority, develop godly, righteous character. Develop godly, righteous character. Everything that comes at us is a character-building moment. From the person that cuts us off in traffic to the person who takes a parking spot in the grocery parking lot that we wanted, that requires us to walk an extra 50 feet. Drives me crazy. Person will drive around for 5 minutes looking for a spot that's 50 feet closer, and they get out of the car, and I'm like, man, you could have used that extra 50 feet to burn some calories. You know what I'm saying? That was bad. I shouldn't have said that. Anyways. It's a problem in my character. Anyways, you come to understand and realize that the development of character comes as things come at us and decisions that have to be made. What we choose to do. In his book, The Death of Character, this is from page 4, the author James Davison Hunter wrote the following. Let me share this with you. He says, does character really matter? The collective wisdom of the ages would say it matters a great deal. In both classical and biblical cultures, civilizations that have been so deeply formative to our own, people well understood there to be a direct association between the character of individuals and the well-being of society as a whole. So he's drawing a correlation between character and society. If you take a look at what's happening in our nation today, you see a lack of character. And the society breaks down as a whole. Individual character was essential to decency, order, and justice within public life. Without it, hardship was not far off. Indeed, much of the history of the ancient Hebrews can be told as a story of blessing for faithfulness to God, abiding by God's standard of holiness, and punishment for abandoning those standards. Isn't that true? When you go back to the Old Testament, it is cyclical. That Israel loved God and said, yes, we love you, we will worship you, we will faithfully obey you. And then they fell down, they started worshiping other gods, they went into captivity. Oh God, please deliver us, please deliver us, please deliver us. And God was faithful to do it. And they did it for a while and they came back around, they started worshiping other gods. It was like this cycle over and over and over again. Abandoning the standards means that punishment comes into play. What is the punishment as an end result of a bad decision for us? It again affects the character that God is working to develop in us. Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. Romans chapter 12 and verse 2. He says, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is the good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Transformed is a key word that I would point in that particular verse. It means it must be changed. It must be altered. So the attitude and the frame of mind that exists when we say, in a particular moment in time that, humanly speaking, we want to take this action, we say, I can't do that because that will alter and affect the ability for God to develop the righteous character within me. Renewed daily, self-will is always to seek to take us down the wrong path. We know that. We know that. Prophet Jeremiah said that it is not within man to direct his own steps. Self-will determines that it wants to go down a different path. But the development of godly righteous character must be a priority. When God comes first, then this development of righteous character. Luke chapter 22. Let's go over to Luke chapter 22 and pick up one verse. Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22 and verse 42. Here is a statement that talks about, in my mind, the essence of the ultimate of godly character based upon the situation and what was happening and what was occurring. We find that Jesus Christ was here in the Garden of Gethsemane, this final prayer that he was going to offer up to God, in which he was grieved, he was deeply moved by the situation. Humanly speaking, he understood what was going to happen. He understood the pain. He understood the agony that was going to take place. Where would we be at that particular moment in time? And what decision would we make? When you have that split second in time where you have to make that decision, what decision would we make? Notice the decision that he made. Luke chapter 22, verse 42. He was withdrawn from them a stone's throw. He knelt down and prayed, saying, Father, if it is your will, take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. The essence of character to make that statement, when you understand and know the pain and the suffering that, physically speaking, you have to go through. Yes, there is the joy. Yes, there's the understanding of realizing that you are paying the penalty for all of mankind's sins. But there's another reality in place here. Another reality in place is that you must seek the will of God first. This again takes character. This again takes character that if you can take this, if there's another way that we can do this, but nevertheless, not what I want, but as you say, we will do. That is the essence of godly character. In that moment in time when the decision has to be made that it is not our will that is sought, but the will of God. That requires us renewing the mind daily, as we read back a moment ago in Romans 12 and verse 2. To understand the will of God is not something that we know 1 month, 1 year, 1 week. We know it and we must seek it and understand it daily. We must understand it daily in order for, again, godly character to be developed. Finally, number three, what is the third priority? What is the third priority? It goes back to Matthew 6:33, seek first the kingdom. Now, let me ask you a question. Why have I listed this one last? Well, if you follow the list that I just gave you, God must come first. Develop godly righteous character. We must come to understand that first and foremost, we must follow the creator of the plan that is bringing about his kingdom. Second, we must overcome human nature and the pulls of wrong motives, wrong desires. Then when we do that, we have the ability to understand and fully seek that kingdom because we understand that God is first, his character is first, and anyone that is going to be in that kingdom must be developing that character now. The motives have to be changed. The pull of wrong motives. What was it about Haggai at that particular time that God had a problem with? As I said before, was it that they were building their fancy homes? No. He never said it was wrong for them to do that. What he said was, your priorities are wrong. You've gotten things out of step. You've placed your homes before my home. You've placed your home before my temple. Their motives had changed as an end result of being in the captivity and that way that they had lived in. Perhaps, again, it's a feeling of security, a feeling of everything's fine right now. I'm comfortable. I don't have to worry about anything. But they had been leading a life. They've been leading a life of seeking faster horses, younger women, older whiskey, and more money. They were interested in that temporal. Notice over in 1 John chapter 2 and verse 17. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 17. In the prior verses, the Apostle John talks about the lust of the world, the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life. He goes through all of that. But notice, I want you to focus in on verse 17. 1 John chapter 2 and verse 17. He says, "And the world is passing away and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever." The world is temporal. We understand that and realize that as we keep the Feast of Tabernacles every year. We come to understand that the greatness of that millennium and everything that happens and occurs gives way to the great white throne judgment, which gives way to stepping into eternity. So the physical life that we live in now is temporal. We know that, right? We understand that. So why do we become so enticed by something that's temporal? Why do we become so excited in something that was temporal? Why did Israel become so ensconced in something that was temporal in their captivity? They were to go back and rebuild the temple because they'd gotten comfortable. They'd been happy in that condition that they were in. Notice over in Revelation chapter 11 and verse 15. Revelation chapter 11 and verse 15. He says, then the seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in the heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. A kingdom that lasts forever. An existence that lasts forever. Being part of a family that lasts forever. These are the motivations that should matter. These are the things that should matter. Brethren, we as human beings all have priorities. For billions and billions of human beings on the face of the earth, the meaning of life is all about faster horses, younger women, older whiskey, and more money. It's all about the priority of stuff. History reveals and even records for us that God's people got their priorities sidetracked by stuff. The message to Haggai was, you're more interested in your stuff than the priority of rebuilding my temple. We all would do well to take a hard look at the question that was asked of them, what are my priorities? Or in other words, consider your ways. If they are not the three that I gave you, God must come first. Develop godly righteous character. Seek first the kingdom. Then I would submit to you that we have some work to do. As we look ahead, let us consider the admonition of Haggai and consider our ways. In other words, let's consider our priorities.